Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. On today's As It Is, we talk about choices for women. From serious choices about family planning to a lighter story about choices in clothing, coming later in the second half of today's program. But first, we go to Iran.
The human rights group Amnesty International says proposed new laws in Iran would severely limit women's freedom. It says the country's leaders want to limit a woman's ability to get treatment to stop a pregnancy. It says the leaders also want to make getting a job harder for young, childless women. Christopher Cruz brings us that story.
Iran is taking these actions to try to keep the country's birth rate from dropping further. Iran's leaders believe the country's declining population is a major threat to its future. The rights group says the leaders' actions show that the government wants young Iranian women to become, in its words, baby-making machines. Raha Bahraini is the group's expert on Iran. Ms. Bahraini says the proposed laws could threaten the lives of some Iranian women. Shireen Hussein is a demographic researcher at King's College in London. Demographers study populations, including births, aging, and migration. Ms. Hussein says Iran's birth rate has dropped because of poor economic conditions during the war with Iraq in the 1980s. And because of government policies that urged people to have fewer children. Today, Iran's birth rate is around 1.8. That number is below what demographers call the replacement level. Ms. Hussein says because of the declining birth rate, the number of people in the country is lower than it once was. She blames the situation on the falling number of marriages and the increasing number of divorces. Amnesty International says Iran also wants to limit divorces and strengthen already existing discrimination against women in employment. It says men and women who already have children would be given priority for jobs. Researcher Raha Bahraini says that policy would make it difficult for young women without children to get a job. Demographer Shireen Hussein says she understands why Iran's leaders want to stop the population from declining, but she says the policies they are supporting would cause economic pain in the short term because larger families need more health care and schools. Ms. Hussein says another problem for Iran and neighboring countries is their population is growing older. As the number of older people increases, governments are pressured to spend more money to provide more services. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program, As It Is. Next, we hear a lighter story about girls having more choices in the clothes they wear.
It is true that many little girls like pretty flowers and watching cute kittens and riding horses. But many girls also like cars, robots, and spaceships. But clothing for girls usually has pictures of flowers, butterflies, horses, or kittens.
So two mothers decided to make clothes that represent all the things that little girls are and do and love. Marcia James tells us about these women and their daughters.
6-year-old Bella loves to build houses and play with cars.
I like Barbie, also dinosaurs.
So her dress has pictures of dinosaurs on it.
I need a train to put on the train track.
Her friend Penny enjoys making things with building blocks.
I like to make trucks.
The 4-year-old also likes the colors pink and purple and the dress she is wearing. Kathy Traumatana is Penny's mother.
She really enjoys wearing it. It's bright and comfortable and unique.
Penny's clothing is unusual because it has images in the shape of the mathematical symbol pi. Kathy Traumatana says the design opens the door to discussions on mathematics. The pi and dinosaur dresses are from a new girl's clothing line called Princess Awesome. Rebecca Melski set up the business. She says its products for girls have some designs normally found on boys' clothes.
I think that a girl wearing a dress with science on it, she's telling the world when she's out that this is something she's interested in. She can love girly things and also love science. It tells science is just as much for girls as it is for boys.
It all started 2 years ago when Rebecca Melski was hoping to buy clothing for her 2-year-old, who refused to wear anything but a dress. Miss Melski bought pajamas meant for boys because her daughter also liked robots, trucks, and spaceships.
And one day I walked out past through the girls' section of the store and I thought to myself, like, I wish they made one of those cute dresses that also had a robot on it or a dinosaur because she would wear that. She would love that. And then I thought, hey, someone should do that. Maybe I should do that.
Her friend Eva St. Clair believed she should, and their business was born. The two women got together on Saturdays. They used fabrics with images of trucks, airplanes, pirates, and atoms. They also created art dresses based on works by Van Gogh and Monet.
Usually Rebecca and I would be down in my basement. Rebecca would cut and I would stitch, and we got to where we could do about 4 in an hour.
The women sold the first 70 dresses they made at a local market. So the founders decided to expand their business online. Their products sold very well there, too.
These sold out so fast, I could not make them fast enough. We decided it was time to figure out how to go into a factory.
So they turned to a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. The women met their goal of $35,000 within days and raised more than $215,000 in donations.
Our biggest challenge is going to be how do we expand as rapidly as people seem to want us to.
The founders hope Princess Awesome will expand into products for girls of all ages and all interests. I'm Marcia James.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
And check us out on Facebook or our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
You're Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. Have you ever felt pure fear? A fear that makes you act in a way you normally would not? That is panic. Panic is a great fear that makes otherwise normal people do abnormal things. To hit the panic button means to panic suddenly. Another common expression is widespread panic. It describes an event that causes panic among large numbers of people. For example, the spread of disease caused widespread panic throughout Europe during the Middle Ages. The origin of the word panic comes from the Greek word panikos. According to Greek myth, Pan was the god of flocks and shepherds. Greek legend says that Pan was half human and half goat. He lived in the woods and in the fields. His angry voice was so scary that it caused panic to anyone who was unlucky enough to be nearby. According to one Greek myth, Pan fell in love with a beautiful nymph. A nymph is a spirit that takes the shape of a young woman and lives in the mountains, forests, meadows, and water. Pan tried to capture her, but she ran away. The nymph hid in a river, taking the form of a reed, a thick, hollow grass that lives in the water. The wind made a song as it blew across the hollow reeds. Pan did not know which reed was the nymph, so he took a handful and joined them together, side by side, and carried it with him to hear the music it played. Today, we call this instrument a pan flute. Of course, this is just the Greek story. Pan flutes also have a long history in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Americas. Just like the pan flute, panic can be found everywhere. Mental health experts treat people with panic disorders. The American Psychological Association defines a panic attack as a sudden surge of overwhelming or extreme fear that comes without warning and without any obvious reason. The word panic also describes economic or financial disasters. The most infamous financial panic in the U.S. was the stock market crash of 1929. Some people on Wall Street, where stocks were traded, were so panicked that they jumped from their office windows. Panic is also a great literary tool. Jack London was an American writer who wrote The Sea Wolf. He left school at age 14 to become a seaman. Published in 1904, The Sea Wolf has a panicked shipwreck scene that is partly based on Mr. London's experience as a sailor in the Pacific Ocean. Two ships crash together in the ocean. Women passengers scream with panic as the ship goes down into the freezing ocean waves. As one man finds himself adrift alone in the sea, another type of panic takes hold of him.
I was alone. I could hear no calls or cries. Only the sound of the waves made weirdly hollow and reverberant by the fog. A panic in a crowd, which partakes of a sort of community of interest, is not so terrible as a panic when one is by oneself. And such a panic I now suffered. I confess that a madness seized me, that I shrieked aloud as the women had shrieked, and beat the water with my numb hands.
Panic is a powerful tool in myth or literature, but not so much in real life. So next time you feel extreme fear taking hold of you, causing you to lose all reason, remember to remain calm and don't panic. I'm Anna Mateo. Christopher Jones Cruz read the passage from Jack London's The Sea Wolf.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we explore the life of dancer and choreographer Martha Graham. She created almost 200 dance pieces. She is often called the mother of modern dance. Her influence on the world of dance continues today.
In the beginning of the 20th century, women like Isadora Duncan and Ruth St. Denis wanted to create a new form of dance. Duncan and St. Denis felt restricted by ballet. Modern dance was created as a revolt against ballet. Martha Graham was one of the most famous dancers and creators of dance, called choreographers. She brought modern dance to a new level of popularity in American culture. She created a new language of movement that expressed powerful emotions. She started traditions that are still used in modern dance today. They include expressive movements of the body to tell a dramatic story, special music, lighting, stage design, and costumes.
Martha Graham was born in the small town of Allegheny, Pennsylvania, in 1894. After Martha turned 14 years old, her family moved to Santa Barbara, California. While traveling across the Midwest, Martha enjoyed the wide open spaces of nature. She also enjoyed the beautiful flowers and plants in California. The free, expressive movements of modern dance were clearly influenced by the beauty of nature, Graham observed.
Earlier in her life, however, Martha did not know that she would become a dancer. Her father was a doctor, and her family was very religious. They were members of the upper class and did not accept dance as an art form. Still, in 1910, Martha's father took her to see a dance performance by Ruth St. Denis, one of the first modern dancers in America. Martha was 16, and she decided then that she wanted to become a dancer.
Ruth St. Denis and Isadora Duncan were at the center of attention in modern dance. They established some of the traditions we see today. For example, Duncan was famous for starting the tradition of not wearing dance shoes while performing. St. Denis was famous for creating dances influenced by other cultures. She studied dance from countries such as Mexico and Egypt, instead of the European countries where ballet had started. Martha Graham took an immediate interest in this new art form.
Martha's parents, however, did not approve of her sudden desire to dance. At this time, people saw American dance as a lower art form. Graham chose to follow her dream of dancing, even though she was considered too old to begin dancing. She was in her early 20s when she began studying dance in 1916. She attended the school created by Ruth St. Denis and her husband, Ted Shawn, in Los Angeles, California. At the Denis-Shawn Dance School, Graham worked very hard to improve her ability to dance. She trained her body to become strong enough to meet the difficult demands of dance. She performed with the Denis Shawn Dance Company for several years before moving to New York City. There, Graham performed in shows, but she wanted to make greater experiments with dance.
Martha Graham started teaching dance at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York. Later, she returned to New York City to teach at Carnegie Hall. She began to choreograph or create the steps of dances. In order to express herself freely, she decided to establish her own dance company and school. In 1926, she started the Martha Graham Center of Contemporary Dance. She enjoyed having her own company of students to perform her dances. Graham produced a dance called Heretic in 1929. She wore all white and danced against a wall of dancers wearing all black. Graham began to work with music composer Louis Horst. She worked with him until he died in 1964. Graham once said that without Horst, she would have felt lost.
In 1936, Graham created Chronicle, one of her most important dances. Chronicle was influenced by current events, including the Great Depression and the Spanish Civil War. The dance expressed sadness and loneliness. At this time, showing strong emotions in dance was very rare. Graham also created dances based on ancient Greek tragic stories and famous female heroines. At first, people did not react well to Graham's style of dancing. It was very different from European ballet, which was more commonly accepted. Graham's dances were powerful, with strong and sharp movements. Some of the movements involved contracting and releasing parts of the body, using the arms in dramatic movements, and falling to the floor. These movements are still used in modern dance today.
In 1938, President Franklin Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, invited Martha Graham to perform at the White House. She created a dance called American Document. Graham later danced at the White House for seven other presidents. In 1944, Martha Graham created Appalachian Spring, one of her most famous dances. It tells the story of a wedding among early American settlers. Aaron Copland composed this music for Appalachian Spring.
In 1951, Graham was among the people who established the dance program at the Juilliard School in New York City. It is still one of the best art schools in the country. Many famous artists have begun their careers by studying there. Graham created her largest dance in 1958. She named it Clytemnestra, and used music from the Egyptian composer Halim Eldad. Graham worked with other famous and influential people in the world of dance. Many of her students became famous dancers and choreographers. She also taught movement to famous people, including singer Madonna, actress Bette Davis, and film director Woody Allen.
Some of her dances were filmed and made into a DVD called Martha Graham, Dance on Film. This is a collection of three programs Graham made for American Public Television in the 1950s and 60s. A Dancer's World is an introduction to Graham and her work. She tells about her dances, and her dance group shows some of their methods. The DVD also includes films of two of her dances, Appalachian Spring and Night Journey.
Graham continued to dance past the age of 70. Once again, she was met with criticism from people who came to watch her shows. Younger people knew that Graham was an important influence, but they did not understand the meaning behind her dances. Graham began to suffer emotionally. She began to drink too much alcohol. She later wrote a book about herself called Blood Memory. In her book, she wrote that she performed for the last time in 1970 when she was 76 years old. 2 years later, Graham stopped drinking alcohol. She went back to her dance company to choreograph more dances. The final dance she completed was called Maple Leaf Rag, which she finished in 1990. Scott Joplin composed the music many years earlier.
Martha Graham received many awards during her lifetime, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1976. She was the first dancer to receive the country's highest civilian honor. She died in 1991 at the age of 96. In 1998, Time magazine listed her as the Dancer of the Century and as one of the most important people of the 20th century. The Martha Graham Dance Company still performs her dances in New York and around the world.
This program was written by Elizabeth Stern. It was produced by Elizabeth Stern and LaJuan Davis. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. You can learn about other interesting Americans at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.